The Children of Lear, written and read by Neil Dennehy. Fado, fado, a long time ago, there lived a great Irish king called Lear. Not to be confused with Manannán Mac Lear, the Celtic sea god who was also a member of the Tuatha Dé, the magical nature-loving race that once ruled Ireland. Nor should our Lear be mistaken for William Shakespeare's King Lear. This Lear was famous in his own right, powerful, wise, and fair. He almost became the chief of the Tuatha Dé himself when the Dagda, their first king, died. However, it was the Beau of Darraig, eldest son of the Dagda, who was elected to become their new leader. After claiming his throne and wanting to ensure peace, loyalty, and friendship between them, Beau of Darraig arranged a great feast, to which he invited Lear as guest of honour, and offered him the opportunity to marry one of his daughters. Lear chose the beautiful Eve, Beau of Darraig's eldest, who was beautiful, delicate, wise, and gentle. Eve was happy with the match, and they fell deeply in love, and by the time four seasons had passed, Fionnuala, their daughter, was born. Then came their son Aedh, and later they were blessed with twin boys, Fiacra and Conn. Lear couldn't have been happier with his life. Unfortunately, as is the way of the world, all things must change, and even the magic of the Tuatha Dé cannot hold on to perfect happiness forever. The effort of carrying and giving birth to the twins had been too much for the fragile Aoife, and she never fully recovered. A short time later, her weakened body came to rest and her spirit crossed over to the other world. Lear was heartbroken for himself and the little ones. He lost all interest in hunting, fishing, or his responsibilities in leading his people. Only his love for the children kept him going. He found peace in watching them play and listening to their sweet voices. Beau of Darraig, out of concern for his grandchildren and the people of Lear's kingdom, suggested that his next daughter Aoife might marry Lear, providing the children with a mother and a king with a good wife so he could resume his duties. Aoife jumped at the chance. Secretly, she had wanted Lear to choose her as his wife the day of her father's feast. Like her older sister, she was beautiful, intelligent, and trained in the ways of magic. But she was made of tougher stuff, and lacked the tender heart wisdom that came naturally to Aoife. Aoife tried to fill her sister's boots in all ways, but didn't realise that it takes time for close connections to form, and though she was welcomed by Lear and his family into their home, they simply weren't ready to replace a mother just yet. Aoife soon came to resent the closeness, time and attention the children and their father had for one another. She wanted to feel love, as we all do. She longed for the same love from her new family as she had seen them give their mother. With patience, Lear and his children would have come to love and accept her. Not exactly as they did their mother. Love expresses itself differently in each situation, but every bit as much. And, had she been a little wiser, Aoife would have known that the wonderful, warm and cosy feeling that radiates from your chest and fills your entire body doesn't actually come from being loved by someone else anyway. We feel it when we allow love to flow through us for somebody else. That is the key. And so, with each passing day, her disappointment and feelings of hurt grew, and the new stepmother became more and more jealous of the sweet, innocent children. Her heart became tighter, and as it closed off to kindness and compassion, her mind opened to darker thoughts, and she started to entertain plots and schemes that would give her all the attention that she believed was rightfully hers. Now we all know that hurt people hurt people. So Aoife, in her heartache, began to consider ways to harm the children. And she eventually came up with a plan to get rid of them completely. Only then, she thought, could she have Lear all to herself, start a family of her own with him, and finally be happy. Since the king had been neglecting his duties to his people, he had much work to catch up on, so Aoife offered to take the children down south to see Bóg Dearg on Slievenamon in County Tipperary. The children, bursting with excitement to see their grandfather, convinced Lear that it was a good idea, and after a quick breakfast of eggs and toast, they packed up their bags into a carriage and left with Aoife. It was a very hot summer's day, so as they were passing Loch Derrivara, just short of Mullingar in the county of Westmeath, Aoife ordered her carriage driver to stop and sent all the children to cool off in the lake. The three boys howled with enthusiasm and tore down to the water as fast as their legs could carry them. Fionnuala, whose two-a-day magic was already starting to show itself, sensed that something was wrong. She had a dream just the night before of water, wings, storms and songs, but couldn't make any sense of it. Dreams are often like that. They tell us something, but in a mixed-up, muddled kind of a way. Despite her better judgment, Fionnuala followed the brothers into the water and then forgot her troubles as she joined in the splashing and the fun. Aoife settled herself into a comfortable patch of grass a little way back from the water's edge. And, seeing the children were paying her no attention at all, she brought out a sleek hazel wand that was hidden in the long sleeve of her velvet purple cloak. She began to draw patterns and symbols in the air and whispered words of power and intent. Well versed in the art of magic, she understood that an intention when thought, good or bad, would only affect the one thinking it. But an intention spoken clearly and carefully is released out into the world to help or harm as it may. Then she added even more power to her words with a melody, singing a beautiful but terrible song. The air directly in front of her shimmered as she wove her spell, wisps of darkness spinning into an orb, surrounded by the symbols drawn with her magic wand. The floating globe pulsed with dark greys, purples and reds as it filled with Aoife's jealousy, bitterness and disappointments. However, even on our worst days, in our darkest moments, there's always some good in everyone. And this was the case with Aoife. Some of the kindness and love that was buried deep inside her for her niece and nephews escaped through a tiny crack in her heart, and glistening strands of gold flowed out to join the spiraling, hovering mass. The children suddenly became aware of Aoife's wicked song. As they turned in her direction, she became deathly silent, looked them cruelly in the eyes, and gently blew on the now completed spell. The children watched with mouths wide open as it floated towards the lake above their heads and suddenly expanded into a great storm. Fionnuala's heart sank as she realized that she should have trusted her instincts, and now it was too late to escape. A deafening wind raged about their ears, waves crashed over their heads, and the lake water swirled in whirlpools all about them. Aoife smiled callously from the shore as she watched and waited for the four innocent children to disappear for good, just as she had imagined. But then, all at once, something happened that none of them expected. The slivers of golden threads that had found their way into the incantation had also grown stronger, and they sought out the four siblings that were holding on to each other for dear life. They created a golden bubble around the children, sheltering them from the full force of the storm and the dark magic that would do them ill. It couldn't protect them entirely, but it did respond to their deepest wishes to stay together and to see and speak to their father again. They began to transform into creatures that could weather such a storm. Their necks became long and slender, their arms stretched and formed into wings. Waterproof feathers of pure white formed all over their bodies, and their mouths turned into vibrant orange beaks. When the golden magic of kindness and the dark power of the storm were finally spent, the clouds cleared, the wind became quiet, and four of the most beautiful swans ever to grace the land were revealed, floating on the still water of Loch Derivara. Aoife was enraged to see not only had they survived, but that they could speak as she heard Fionnuala comfort her crying brothers. With her magic almost exhausted, Aoife used what remained to curse the children to live as swans for 900 years. 300 on the Midlands lake in which they now swam. 300 up north in the Sea of Moyle between Ireland and Scotland. And the last 300 out west on the Sea of Erris. And even then, only when a king of the north marries a queen of the south and the bell of a new religion rings, could her spell be broken and the children return to human form. When her curse was cast, Aoife fled in her carriage for the safety of her father's house, leaving the swans to their fate. But Bóv Darrig was less than impressed to hear what Aoife had done to his only grandchildren, all that he had left of his own firstborn daughter Eve. Infuriated, he took his own druid's wand and transformed Aoife into nothing more than the cold breath she used to cause so much suffering. She became a chill wind that to this day causes shivers down spines, collars to be turned up around necks, and makes you cold to your bones if you stay out in it too long. When Lear heard of what had befallen his children, he went straight to Loch Derivara. Again his heart was broken as he realized that nobody, magician, sorcerer, not even Bóv Darrig could undo the curse. But once more it was the sweet voices of his children that brought him peace. He spent the rest of his days by the lakeside, with the magical swans not just giving him comfort, but their songs also healing him each day, letting him live on for another 300 years. Many others heard of this, came to the lake, and were cured by the magic of the swan song. Now, even 3 centuries, as long as it seems, passes too quickly when you don't want it to end. And one day an icy wind, that some say was Aoife, returned to ensure her curse fulfilled, blew hard across the lake and forced the swans to take flight. It was time to say goodbye to their father, leave the Lake of Oaks and head north for the Sea of Moyle. If the first 300 years of their course was somewhat pleasant, the next 300 in that stretch of water between Ireland and Scotland was anything but. In the spring, wild storms and violent waves dashed the rocks where the three brothers were sheltered under the wings of their sister. Aoife had noticed that in the worst weather, local seals would congregate on one large rock, Carraig na Rón, the Rock of the Seals. And knowing that it must offer some protection from the elements, she told her siblings to meet there whenever they became separated by the turbulent and unpredictable weather. Summer was a little better, but lonely without human visitors to speak or sing to. Winter was so cold that the sea itself iced over, and the swans often found their webbed feet and wing tips frozen to the rocks. Only the warmth of each other's bodies, as they huddled together, gave them any reprieve. Every day was a lesson in working together and taking care of those closest to you. Now, time often appears to pass more slowly in difficult situations, but it moves on all the same. And after 300 years, a bitter whispering wind picked them up and drove the graceful birds inland, over a landscape and a people that had changed dramatically while they were away. The shapes of the hills and valleys were the same, but much of the great forests had been cleared to make fields, as hunting and gathering gave way to farming. They winged their way onward toward their first home at Castle Pollard, but found only moss-covered ruins. They flew on to their grandfather's home at Slievenamon, but didn't realise he now lived under the cairn, a huge pile of rocks at the top of the mountain. While the children endured the wild storms of the north, the two-a-day had all gone underground and become known as the Sidhe, or fairies, myths and legends to the people that now lived on the land, just like the children of Lear had become fables themselves. So the four swans flew west to the Sea of Eris off the coast of County Mayo. With warmer air, more shelter, and plenty of food, they were comfortable, happy even, and they began to sing again for the first time in centuries. Though people rarely came there, from their favourite spot on the island of Inishglore, their glorious music attracted birds of all sizes, colours, shapes and shades. It became a paradise for migrating geese, ducks, gulls and waders. Native birds from the mainland, Achill and the Aran Islands, would flock there to what became known as Loch Nanane, the Lake of the Birds, to listen and add their own melodies to the symphony of sounds. During this time, a new religion was brought to Ireland by St. Patrick, and as its followers spread throughout the country, one day a holy man in simple robes, named Macuévoug, arrived on a small rowing boat to Inishglore. He couldn't believe his ears when he heard the angelic music floating on the sea breeze, nor his own eyes when he found it coming from four beautiful swans and an orchestra of birds. He fainted on the spot when they saw him approach and began to speak to him in human voices. Luckily, a thick, soft, mossy mound cushioned his fall, and when he awoke, Fionnuala spoke gently, as she told him a story that he had heard, but believed was only a fairy tale. Macuévoug chose to stay on the island paradise and build a small church. When his work was done each day, he would share stories with the swans from the mainland of his god, religion, and the Bible. And the swans in return told him tales of the old gods and their magic. They enjoyed each other's company and time passed quickly. One day a new sound came to the island when Macuévoug rang, for the first time, the bell that he had just installed to finish his church. The swans stopped singing for a moment as they recognised what this could mean, and then they sang even more joyously than before, waiting to be transformed back into their human forms. But nothing happened. They asked Macuévoug to ring it again, as loudly as he could for as long as his arms would allow. Still their feathers, wings, webbed feet and beaks remained. That evening Fionnuala spoke once more of the curse that had been placed upon them 900 years before. She remembered a part that had been long forgotten, like a dream that is just out of reach. For the curse to end, a king from the north must marry a queen from the south. Luckily, on one of his overnight trips to the mainland for building supplies, and after having a little too much wine at a pub, Macuévoug had told the locals that the children of Lear were real and living on Inishglore. Of course, none of them believed it, but the story spread of the hermit priest that had spent too much time alone on the island and now believed in fairy tales. It reached the ears of Largnan, a king of the north, who intended to marry Jock, a princess of the south. He knew that she loved the story of the children of Lear, and if there were any chance that he could have them as a wedding gift for his bride, he would have to go to Inishglore to see for himself. Largnan arrived at the island with a small band of warriors to meet the holy man and ask for the birds. But Macuévoug could not give what he did not own. He didn't believe that any person could own any creature of nature. They were each their own, Laridnan went to the swans himself and told them of his desire. And when they too refused, he ordered his men to grab them. But they didn't get a chance. Hearing the northern king's intention to marry a woman from the south was enough to fulfil the final part of the curse. A chill wind blew in from the sea, surrounding the swans, and kept the men back in a flurry of feathers. When it died down, four humans lay on the soft grass. But they were not children. Their hair was as white as the feathers they had worn. Their skin as wrinkled as their webbed feet. They looked every day of the 900 years they had lived. Machuevog, being a kind man, covered them in his own cloak and, realizing that their time on this earth was short, he took out some holy water to baptize them. But as he did so, a mound of earth just yards away suddenly split open with a flash of lightning, revealing a doorway to the underground world of the fair folk. A host of two-a-day marched from the mound, each one tall and elegant with beautiful features and glimmering robes. The northern king and his men stepped back as the she surrounded the children of Lear, softly whispering words of magic and comfort to them in the warm glow of the evening sun. Fionnuala, Aeg, Fiacra and Conn drifted into a deep, peaceful sleep as the magic of the she restored their youth. In that moment, the northern king vowed to proclaim a new law, one that survives to this day, that no swan shall ever be harmed on the island of Eire or her waters. Picking them up gently, the two-a-day carried the children of Lear to the seashore, where a shimmering golden path stretched out across the calm water towards the setting sun. Machuevo gazed in silent wonder as the entire party of magical beings strode gracefully along its glistening passageway. Ireland was changing. It seemed to be getting smaller as north and south were coming together. People's connections with the land, the water, the animals and the trees gave way to new ways of living. And different faiths and beliefs were emerging. But still, Machuevog knew, as he watched the two-a-day vanish into the horizon, that their magic and wisdom would live on in our stories and in our very bones to be reclaimed when we are ready. And if you sit quietly in nature for even a few minutes, listen carefully and breathe softly, I'm sure you'll hear their gentle whispers. Feel the magic tingling through your body, and know that they never really left.